Chapter 8. Stretching the Mind to Its Limits. Subhuti asked, "What then, O Lord, is this discourse on Dharma, and how should I bear it in mind?" The Lord replied, "This discourse on Dharma, Subhuti, is called wisdom which has gone beyond, and as such should you bear it in mind." This is the end of the first part of the sutra. The first chapter of part 2 goes on hammering away with the same principle applied to a number of different cases. And why? Just that which the Tathagata has taught as the wisdom which has gone beyond, just that he has taught as not gone beyond. Therefore it is called wisdom which has gone beyond. What do you think, Subhuti? Is there any Dharma which the Tathagata has taught? Subhuti replied, "No, indeed, O Lord, there is not." The Lord said, "When, Subhuti, you consider the number of particles of dust in this world system of 1,000,000,000 worlds, would they be many?" Subhuti replied, "Yes, O Lord, because what was taught as particles of dust by the Tathagata, as no particles that was taught by the Tathagata, therefore are they called particles of dust. And this world system the Tathagata has taught has no system, therefore it is called a world system." The Lord asked, "What do you think, Subhuti? Can the Tathagata be seen by means of the 32 marks of the Superman?" Subhuti replied, "No indeed, O Lord." "And why?" "Because those 32 marks of the Superman, which were taught by the Tathagata, they are really no marks. Therefore are they called the 32 marks of the Superman." When you come to express translogical matters in terms of logic, you can only express them in terms of contradictions or paradoxes. Something is what it is because it is what it is not, or everything is what it is because of emptiness. You have something because you do not have it. The Buddha has the 32 marks of the Superman. Why does he have them? Because he does not have them. His having them is a no having them. Really, we need to reflect upon this. It is not going to become immediately obvious. We can understand what is being said, except that it is quite evident nonsense on the level of logical discourse. Does this nonsense, however, convey any glimmer of translogical meaning? Is it possible to draw some faint insight into what the Buddha might be getting at? Sometimes, perhaps, but as soon as you start thinking about it, the glimmer of meaning evaporates. It is just not susceptible to any kind of brain teasing. It is something to be taken up in the context of meditation and reflection. Shunyata is no kind of substance or thing, not even a metaphysical or transcendental thing, and we have to appreciate that language compels us to speak about it as though it was. In speaking about Shunyata, we have to do continual violence to language, and when we stop doing violence to language, when we start taking what we say about Shunyata literally, then we are no longer speaking about Shunyata. The basic point made by the Madhyamika school and by the Mahayana generally is that Shunyata is not to be thought of in terms of existence or non-existence. Intellectually speaking, that statement is as far as we can go. We have to transcend it intuitively, as it were, with the eye of wisdom, and see what Shunyata is without seeing it as something that is, and at the same time see what Shunyata is not without seeing it as something that is not. It is very easy to go on like this and allow the intellect to get busy playing around with Shunyata in a way that is not basically serious. All the time we imagine that we are beginning to get a clearer idea, but the purpose of the perfection of wisdom is to baffle the intellect completely, so that we experience the need for some other faculty to come into operation. The Diamond Sutra seeks to cut off every avenue of escape, to bring the intellect up against a sheer unsurmountable wall so that it collapses and accepts that it can make no sort of impression. In the Zen tradition, they say that trying to penetrate shunyata with the intellect is like a gnat trying to penetrate a great ball of steel with its little proboscis. There are no metaphysical statements in Buddhism. It denies us anything to understand on a metaphysical level. When you say, "Ah, yes, now I understand what shunyata means," you have understood the words and their particular meaning, but the words have nothing to do with shunyata. The danger with all this is that one may feel inclined to give up trying to understand before the sutra has done its work. You could say that the Diamond Sutra is a sort of elaborate koan designed to gradually stretch the mind to breaking point. Indeed, the real purpose of Buddhist speculative philosophy is to stretch the mind to its limits. It certainly stretches the mind more effectively than minds have been stretched in the West, and it therefore transcends the mind more effectively and cleanly. But the mind is not going to be stretched if it has already cottoned on to the fact that it is on a hiding to nothing. A koan is not going to work if you know what the real koan is right from the start. It is only after you have already struggled to understand it that it dawns on you what the koan is, and then you get a glimpse of something beyond. If a Zen student is given the koan of the goose in the bottle, for example, the koan he has to wake up to is not the koan of the goose in the bottle, but the koan of himself working on the goose in the bottle. The Lord said, and again Subhuti, suppose a woman or a man were to renounce all their belongings as many times as there are grains of sand in the river Ganges, and suppose that someone else, after taking from this discourse on Dharma but one stanza of four lines, would demonstrate it to others. Then this latter, on the strength of that, would beget a greater heap of merit, immeasurable and incalculable. Personal existence would be a better translation of Atma Bhava than all their belongings. To say, suppose a woman or a man were to renounce their personal existence, in other words, to sacrifice their life, would make better sense as well as being more literal. This is, of course, one of the main themes of the sutra, the incommensurability of punya and pranya, or, if you like, of quantity and quality. Even an interminably repeated sacrifice of your very heart's blood, and we must presume that in this context, this means such a sacrifice made without having realized perfect wisdom, produces less merit than simply teaching a little of this sutra. In other words, no amount of conventional religiosity can ever make up for a lack of genuine spiritual insight. This is in no way to belittle the importance for the individual of skillful behaviour. The general point, in terms of the spiritual community, is that however rich your cultural tradition, however intellectually profound your soteriology, however widespread and influential your religion, unless there is present in that tradition some experience of insight, you have not got very much. Buddhism, as a cultural phenomenon, without the Dharma in its true sense, is not really all that helpful.